Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
We're going to deal with a couple issues, one being the increasingly common habit of Congress carrying out the nation's business on Sundays, and a little history of Christmas here in the U.S. You might be just slightly surprised. What would the Founding Fathers say about doing the nation's business on Sunday? Does the Constitution even mention the word Sunday or the Lord's Day? Did you know Christmas used to be controversial in this nation? Granted, it is still today, but this is for another reason that it was controversial. Now, to help us better understand these issues from the viewpoint of our Founding Fathers, my guest today is David Barton, founder and president of Aledo, Texas-based Wall Builders, where it's warmer there than it is here right now. And David is the author of numerous best-selling books, and those are based on the original writings from the Founding Fathers. David was named by Time Magazine as one of America's 25 most influential evangelicals, and he's received numerous national and international awards, including Who's Who in Education and DAR's highest award, the George Washington Honor Medal. Thanks, David, for being with us today.
My pleasure. Great to be with you. Thanks for having me, Dan.
Yeah, I also read on your bio that you make like 400 appearances before groups in a year. How do you do that?
Yeah, I'll end up speaking well over 400 times a year. I had a day recently where I spoke to a breakfast in Boston in the morning, a lunch in Indianapolis, and then an evening meeting in Santa Fe.
So oh, my goodness.
Sometimes you have days like that.
Wow. Well, I appreciate you taking time or finding time to be with us today. I really appreciate that. As I mentioned, you know, during the intro, here recently it seems to be becoming more and more common. The Congress is meeting on a weekend, and a lot of times that weekend includes the entire weekend Sunday. Now, how do you think the Founding Fathers would react to Congress meeting on Sundays?
Well, I know how they'd react because they put it in the Constitution, and they said that Sunday is off limits for legislative actions. It's called the Sunday's Accepted Clause. It's in Article 1 of the Constitution, and it says that on Sundays you can't do federal lawmaking. And that if Congress passes the bill, the President has 10 days to sign the law, Sundays accepted. So Sundays is off limits for federal lawmaking. And it was really practiced that way. It was a big deal. They had at that time actually Sabbath laws, or what were called blue laws, which are still constitutional today. It's just nobody uses them anymore. Well, I got to take that back. In the South, they still use blue laws. You cannot sell liquor on Sundays in stores. You cannot sell entertainment during church hours in stores. So there's still several states that still use some blue laws. But at the time of the founding, I mean, that was a serious thing. And so constitutionally, they put Sundays off limits in the U.S. Constitution. And so the fact that Reed and the others are willing to do that is just another indication they really don't even read the document they've sworn to uphold.
Yeah, and I think that should be rule number one. You have to read the Constitution, which, like you said, they're sworn to uphold.
You know, that seems so simple. And let me just throw in a little anecdote here, because a friend of mine in Congress, Mike Conaway, congressman out of Texas, he's part of what's called the Constitutional Caucus. And we've got about 40 members in Congress who are into this thing that you actually should read the oath that you take.
Mm-hmm.
John Shattuck, a member from Arizona, actually the first bill he introduces every session is that no bill should be allowed to go through Congress unless it contains in the preamble the portion of the Constitution authorizing Congress to pass that particular bill. I mean, his deal is if the Constitution doesn't let you, or if the Constitution lets you, then show us where it is.
Right, right.
So Mike Conaway introduced a measure that was real simple, and it called on every member of Congress to read the Constitution at least once a year. Voluntary measure, just
mm-hmm.
a resolution. And it went to Judiciary Committee. And in Judiciary Committee, the chairman of the Judiciary, and Judiciary Committee is a committee that deals with the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah.
Chairman of Judiciary Committee looks at him and says, "This is the most stupid idea I've ever heard in my
You're
life."
You're kidding.
No. And so that is the response from the Judiciary Committee chairman on reading the Constitution once a year for people who take an oath to uphold it.
Well, I guess the problem is so long. You know, they have time to read these 2,000-page bills, but the Constitution just is so much longer than those, you know, 2,000-page bills. They just don't have the time
to
do
exactly
that.
You're exactly right. I mean, it takes you a good 15 minutes to read the Constitution.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Nobody's got time to do that. I mean, exactly right, Diane.
Yeah, it's amazing how our nation, our Founding Fathers had the vision, the Lord gave them the vision to write this document, and the country was birthed with this document and continues, or up until they began to not read the Constitution, was doing quite well. With the words of the Constitution. But unfortunately, like, just to have the Judiciary Committee saying that was a stupid idea to introduce a bill request thing. This was just a request, a voluntary thing for folks to read the Constitution at least once a year.
Was the most stupid thing you'd ever heard.
Yeah.
I really got a hot email this week from a guy who said, how dare you say that the Constitution has a Sunday's Accepted Clause? He said, it's not in there unless the judges say it's in there. They're the only ones that understand the Constitution. I thought, isn't this interesting?
Yeah.
This is the epitome of it. The Constitution is what the courts say that it is, and unless the court says that the Sunday's Accepted Clause is in the Constitution, it's not in the Constitution.
Well, I have a copy of it right in front of me right now, and those two words are in there.
They're in there. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting that in 1961, the U.S. Supreme Court cited that part of the Constitution to say, hey, this is why we have Sunday blue laws, is because the Constitution says Sunday's off limits. And that's a liberal Supreme Court in 1962.
Right.
I mean, they're the ones that banned prayer and Bible mm-hmm. reading and everything else, and they still saw that as part of it.
They still agree.
It's just a no-brainer, but you got to know your history and know your Constitution, or at least read it every once in a while to even see that.
Yeah. Then the role that the judges have taken in interpreting the law and actually making law in some cases is very troubling, because looking at the Constitution, they have the smallest section in the Constitution.
Yeah, you bet. And, you know, I don't know how to say it in a polite way, but the dumb idea that only judges know the Constitution, and please tell me why it is that we start teaching the Constitution in grade school to elementary kids. They read the Constitution as part of their history class. We shouldn't be teaching the Constitution. Nobody should be allowed to read the Constitution except judges, if that really is the way that it works. And, of course, every logical citizen say, now, wait a minute. The judges aren't the only ones that understand it. Then why is it that we let judges have the final word? You know, they say, well, you know, even though the Constitution says Congress is the only authority that can make laws related to military governing the land and sea forces, we in the Supreme Court have decided what we want you to do with Gitmo. Now, wait a minute.
Yeah.
The Constitution says Congress does that, not the courts.
Mm-hmm.
But if we let them keep getting away with that and think that they're the only ones that get the final word, then my goodness, we will have given the whole nation over to unelected people, and that's just unthinkable.
And we're definitely in the process of doing that now. And what do we do? How can we? I think we need to have some judges who are impeached.
Yeah.
And that may send a message.
Yeah, we actually were working on that in Congress, and the turnover in Congress has completely changed that. We actually had targeted a number of judges. The one we thought would be the easiest case was, there was a judge down in Texas, a federal judge, who kept groping his female employees. And we said, now, if that's not a reason for impeachment, nothing is. And he had been suspended by the Fifth Federal Circuit Court of Appeals on multiple occasions, evidently, in discipline and whatever. But only Congress has the power to control judges.
Mm-hmm.
And if they won't control a judge that keeps groping female employees, we got problems. And we couldn't even get them to impeach him.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, no, lifetime appointments. Well, then where's the accountability? And the Founding Fathers are so good, as they gave Congress six different ways to keep judges under control. But you don't know that's in there unless you read the Constitution. And according to Judiciary Committee, that's the most stupid idea they've ever heard in their life. So there is no way to control judges unless you do it constitutionally, but that only happens from reading the Constitution.
Yeah, which is a dumb idea according to Judiciary.
Exactly.
Boy, that's like a vicious circle. But, you know, we have to retake it. And you know, this just shows, again, elections have consequences.
Yes, they do. And see, this is such an easy thing to fix.
Mm-hmm.
We, the citizens, can make a huge... But, you know, we had an election here in Houston. Houston's got 3 million people in Houston, and we had 150,000 people turn out to vote.
16%.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable. So, you know, if we're going to see things turn around, all we got to do is get 60-70% of the people to show up, and we can have a brand-new Congress
Absolutely.
And a brand-new Senate and everything and get right back on the Constitution. It's an easy thing.
And that 16% of the voters that turned out just a few days ago elected a lesbian for their next mayor.
The first major city to have an openly homosexual leader, and it came from the Bible Belt, and it came with 8%. 15% voted, only takes the majority to win, so 8% of the city chose the leader of the city that is now the openly lesbian, the first open homosexual of any major city in the nation. That's because the other 84% just didn't do anything.
I heard it was rainy and messy down there that day.
Yeah, but that's a pretty poor excuse.
Well, I understand that's a pretty poor excuse, and I'm sure
there's a lot of people who use that excuse.
Yeah, you know, that's a very poor excuse.
But that's a poor excuse to say, oh, it's rainy. I'm not going to go spend the time to walk out of my... They'll walk out of their car into a mall or something, but won't walk out of their car into a voting place, and that's unacceptable.
That is sad, but that's a perfect example of why our nation is in the situation we're in now, because we have failed to fulfill our duties as we the people.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Let's make a complete switch and talk about Christmas now.
Alrighty.
Until I found this article on your all's website, I always figured Christmas was pretty much celebrated the way not the commercialism and all that stuff, but there was a day set aside where we commemorated and celebrated the birth of Jesus. I just assumed that.
Yeah.
But that's not quite the way it was. So how did the Pilgrims and the Puritans celebrate Christmas?
They did not. It was actually against the law to have Christmas celebrations in America and New England. And that was because they were coming out of what they considered to be corrupt government and corrupt church. Both institutions they thought had been totally corrupted, and they were trying to start a new culture in America. So they came over here and said, we've had it with kings, we're going to elect our leaders. And they came over here and said, we're going to run our own churches, we're not having anybody, the Archbishop of Canterbury is not going to tell us how to run our church. So they did not want state-established churches, and they did not want, quite frankly, they didn't want autocratic leaders in church or state. And that was real simple. And so as they looked at that, there's a ton of institutions they rejected. You look in the Constitution, and it makes it unconstitutional to hold a title of nobility. I mean, not only did they not want kings, they didn't even want the whole structure that went with kings. Well, on the church side, not only did they not want autocratic leaders, they didn't want all the celebrations those autocratic leaders did. And so as they looked at so many of the of what we would today consider Christian celebrations, back then they associated it with a corrupt church, and they said, we're not going to do that. And so where so many of these Bible centered colonists came, they rejected the forms of both church and state. That's why they said no nobility and no Christmas, because those are two corrupt institutions we're trying to wean ourselves off of. And it was not until really the mid-1800s before you started having Christmas celebrations in New England. Now, they had them in the South faster than in New England.
Mm-hmm.
New England was the slowest to come around, but Christmas just was not a big... If Christmas happened to fall on a Sunday, you might occasionally get a Christmas sermon, but there was certainly not going to be any special day set aside for Christmas.
So basically, the reasoning was because the Church of England celebrates this holiday.
Yeah.
We're not going to, because we want to completely separate ourselves from the Church of England and everything it represents.
And the Church of England was so corrupt in so many ways that they, I guess I could probably say she kind of threw out the baby with the bathwater. But it also takes that to get weaned off the system, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And that's what Noah Webster said after the American Revolution. He said, look, our problem is we're still using British textbooks after the American Revolution, and if we don't get ourselves an American system of education, we'll end up being British citizens again. And so Noah Webster came up with a brand new way to spell words that we'd used for hundreds of years.
Yeah, they still spell them funny over there.
That's right. That's exactly it. You know, we dropped the U's out of all labor and savior. It's savior, S-A-V-I-O-U-R in the scriptures, but not in America.
Right.
And that was that attempt to break ourselves off and have a different system so that we would not be tempted to go back to what they considered a bad system. And that's what a Christmas celebration was. We don't want to be tempted to go back into a system that we're trying to leave and get away from.
Yeah, it's amazing. I read a couple newspapers from the U.K., and, of course, they spell favor, F-A-V-O-U-R,
that's right.
Like you said, all that stuff. And, of course, over here, when it comes over here on the computer monitor, it's underlined. You know, it's spelled wrong according to Microsoft. But
that's right.
It's amazing. So Noah Webster we can thank for dropping those U's.
That's
from the English spelling.
No, Webster made our words a little shorter.
Mm-hmm.
He made them a little easier to spell, at least for us.
Yeah, right, at least for us, absolutely. So, back in... In fact, it was, I think I'd read where you actually had to pay a fine if you were caught observing Christmas.
That's right.
In Massachusetts, I think it was.
That's right.
Well, and then,
but once they got it weaned off, I mean, after really a couple centuries, then we started picking up Christmas because no longer was it attached to the Church of England.
Mm-hmm.
No longer as part of the Bishop of Canterbury.
We had made that separation.
That's right.
From the Church of England. And you had a lot of interesting information on the website about some of the ways that... Actually, I want to throw this out before we go to that. It was actually, even in 1870 in Massachusetts, in the Boston school system, if the student missed school on Christmas Day, they could be punished or expelled.
That's right.
Can you imagine a kid today having to go to school on Christmas?
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway, but yeah, they moved on beyond that once they made that clean separation.
That's right.
But the Washingtons, during that time period, during his first term, Christmas was still somewhat controversial.
Yeah.
But he had a Christmas party, and
right.
So he even included Christmas parties at that point. And so
it was a lot more acceptable in the southern states than it was in the New England states.
Okay, of course, I've been Virginia.
Virginia had the established church. The Anglican Church was the established church of Virginia all the way till the end of the Revolution. So in states like South Carolina and like Virginia, places where you had the established Anglican Church, they weren't nearly as hostile to Christmas celebrations as you were in places in New England, you know, Connecticut and Rhode Island, all those places that had really kind of broken away from the Anglican Church. That's where you find a whole different view of Christmas. But Washington did celebrate it.
Okay, was the Anglican Church, was that connected to the Church of England?
The Anglican Church was the Church of England.
Church of England. Okay. I was thinking that it was.
Yeah.
And I think those ties are still in place today, aren't they?
They are.
Okay.
Anglican is still tied to the Church of England.
Okay.
It's kind of like Episcopalians are the first cousins of the Church of England, because once we separated from Great Britain, many of those that were Anglicans said, well, we can't be Anglicans now. You know, we've got our own separate nation. And so really, you go back in the 1770s, 1780s, the formation of the Episcopal Church, but it was largely Anglicans that had done that. But it's the American version of Anglicanism, if you will. And that's really too simple, but that's a simple way to think
that's
of it.
That's a way to understand. Yeah, I was trying to get it all straight in my head when I was reading an article a few days ago, so that helps a whole lot. And I guess, you know, the Washingtons had their dignified Christmas party in the late 1700s, and General Washington, or President Washington at that point, invited members of Congress to a Christmas party in 1795. But then we move a little bit this direction in 1834. Andy Jackson celebrated Christmas a little bit differently.
Yeah, and Andrew Jackson, he had his Christmas was dancing and a huge dinner, an indoor snowball fight with cotton balls, and it was games and parties and frolicking for all the kids. And that's really kind of the, I guess you'd call it the first White House Christmas in any sense, was President Jackson had that for his kids, and it was a Christmas frolic for his household, and that was in 1834 in his second term.
So they used cotton balls instead of real snowballs?
That's right.
Oh, I thought it was real
indoor snowball fight with cotton balls.
With cotton balls. Yeah, I kind of envision, I mean, when I think of Andy Jackson, that's kind of the person I envision him as. And George and Martha Washington, I envision them more dignified.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And then Andy Jackson's, you know,
yep.
A completely different personality.
Yep, he's right down with just an average, common, everyday, working folk kind of guy.
Yep.
He's a blue-collar president.
Yep, absolutely, and he carried that over into the White House.
He did.
And in the Lincolns, you were talking about, on the website, you're talking about how the Lincolns celebrated, a couple instances where the Lincolns celebrated Christmas, and in a lot of ways just helping people.
Yeah, so their Christmas was to help others.
Mm-hmm.
And so their Christmas happened, of course, during the Civil War.
Right.
And so Mrs. Lincoln, she would take flowers and books and serve meals to those in the hospitals, the wounded soldiers in the hospitals, and she would raise money to give to orphanages, and she'd give to poor folks who needed something for Christmas, and help raise medical supplies. So her Christmases and her model was to serve others at Christmas. And again, Christmas wasn't a huge celebration at that point in time. There they are at the nation's capital, and the capital often served as a hospital itself. But that was what the Lincolns did for Christmas. It was find ways to help the needy, whether that was in hospitals or orphanages or the poor in the community or whatever. That was their Christmas attempt. It was raise money, collect food, collect gifts, and let's deliver that to people who need it.
Let's do something really meaningful for Christmas.
That's right.
That's basically what they wanted to do. I heard that the first turkey was pardoned.
That's right. Yeah.
It's a Christmas turkey, though.
It's not a Thanksgiving turkey, but it's a Christmas turkey, and it gets its pardon. That's right.
Right. Lincoln's son, Tad.
Tad, that's right.
Become friends with the turkey that was supposed to be Christmas dinner, and he didn't like that idea. So.
That's right. His friend was about to become dinner, and he didn't want his pet. That's right.
Right. That's neat. Then did that start the tradition of pardoning it now Thanksgiving turkey?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know if that started the tradition or not, but it certainly set a precedent.
Yeah.
And that was the first time where you can really point and say, well, you know, because of the kids, this favorite turkey of his is going to get pardoned. And that may be what started. That's a good question. I haven't looked into that.
Well, that's your homework assignment then.
That's right.
Yeah. It is again interesting how the different presidents celebrated Christmas.
Yeah.
Then we get to today, where it's also controversial. Christmas is controversial, and not for the same reason, because, again, too many times the ACLU and such cry separation of church and state if there's a nativity scene on public property, or yeah, rather on government property.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like we've almost, I don't know, made it about face. The Pilgrims and Puritans did not want to celebrate Christmas because they wanted to separate themselves from the Church of England.
Yeah.
Where now the situation is, with it being controversial, it's because it's too...
Well, see, and their argument was, we want to separate from the Church of England because they've made it secular. That the Church
okay.
of England was a secular institution, and Christmas is not secular, and they're trying to make it secular, and we don't want that. So it's the same motivation, which we don't want
okay.
Christmas to be secular. But it was exactly opposite. You're exactly right on the way. I mean, they didn't want the celebration because it was a secular celebration.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to be holy.
And that's one thing we as Christians need to be careful of, is that we keep Christmas holy, and that it's not just a matter of buying gifts just to be buying gifts.
Yeah,
we
that's
need to
exactly
keep,
right.
We need to keep Christ in Christmas, and that is very important. And sometimes this time of year, it's hard to remember that.
Well, you know, it was a really cool thing that happened in World War II with President FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, where he gave an address, and in that address he talked about how that because of the war effort, and America, bless its heart, was so isolationist and so we'll never go to war again, we've had it with wars, that when we got whacked at Pearl Harbor, we were still flying World War I aircraft. We still had biplanes in our military, and our ships and battleships were decades out of date because we just refused to get involved. And so now we're having to catch up with the rest of the world and do what Hitler's got and do what Tojo's got, and they've got great planes and great battleships, and we're not there. And so that's where we got into the thing of rationing and giving up rubber off the tires and putting that into war effort for military trucks and vehicles and giving up gasoline and that going to military. And so with all the national sacrifice that was going on, FDR gave this great address where he talked about that we are because of the, we have our ox in the ditch, essentially, and we're having to run all the time. We no longer have holidays in America. We've taken 4th of July. We now have the factories running on the 4th of July. We've taken Thanksgiving. Factories are running in Thanksgiving. He said the only day that we have as a holiday is the birth of Jesus Christ. He said
wow.
Christmas is the only day where all the factories shut down. He said, and that's because it is a holy day. And this is FDR saying. He
mm-hmm.
said that is a holy day, and that's why we don't work the factories on Christmas. Every other holiday we do, and it's because of the birth of Jesus Christ, the Savior, and it's a holy day.
Wow.
And, boy, that's a great mentality to have, is the birth of Jesus is a holy day.
Mm-hmm. Well, now Christmas is a federal holiday, but those words from FDR are fantastic.
Yeah.
And I don't guess I realized that about Second World War, that we were that far behind technologically, military, with the military, that we were still running World War One tech.
Yeah, we still had biplanes in our Air Force fleet, our Army Air Corps at that time. We were still flying biplanes. We had some other planes as well. Our commercial planes were okay, but our military planes were really pathetic.
Because we didn't want to go to war, and then we weren't
right.
prepared.
Yeah, we didn't want to go to war,
yeah.
So why prepare for war? Because we're not going to get involved in a war. Well, that works all right until you get attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you get attacked, how are you going to defend yourself? And that's, we found ourselves several times in American history in that same place. We refused to get involved in wars until we got attacked by Muslim terrorists back in the 1780s, and then said, you know, we have to change our philosophy here.
Mm-hmm.
So we went through a 32-year war back under George Washington and Adams and Jefferson and Madison, and that changed our military. But by World War II, we were back into it again. It's, look, we don't want
to
fight
anybody.
To
the same isolationism.
That's right.
Yeah. In this world, it can't be that way. Even less today than back then.
You have to be prepared for other people attacking you,
yeah.
even if you don't want to get into war.
Absolutely. So if folks wanted to contact you, David, how would they do that?
Best way is to go to wallbuilders.com, or they can call us at 1-800, the number 8, and the word rebuild. So wallbuilders.com or 800-8-REBUILD.
Okay. I sure appreciate it. This has been an enlightenment for me looking at Christmas in the U.S.
It's great. Thanks for having
okay.
me. God bless.
God bless you, too. Merry Christmas.
You too. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in the efforts to defend traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA by writing to Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania, 16323, or by visiting their website at www.afafpa.org.